I think that if there are two tables on this planet that I feel completely relaxed, it's at my table with my wife and my kids and this table. The marriage supper of the Lamb with all God's kids. I truly relax when I stand behind this table. There isn't a bigger blessing, but there's a top three blessing as being a pastor. Being able to invite you to this table is right up there, top three. And not because of how well the table was set, not because of everything that goes into behind the scenes every communion, but because of him, because of our high priest, because of our sacrifice, because of the invitation, this living, walking invitation that Jesus is to this table. Blessed are all of us who are invited to the marriage supper of the Lamb. See, our studies in the prophecies of Daniel has landed us for this communion here in the midst of all the prophecies that we studied in 7, 8, and 9. And Daniel's prophetic picture of the Son of Man as our perfect judge, our perfect sacrifice in the sanctuary, and our perfect divine high priest is probably what we should have gleaned from 1844 and have done it for a few weeks now, hopefully. In the sanctuary, we hear on earth of its beauty, its perfection, its gleaming gold and silver, beautiful, rich tapestry of blues, reds, and purples. We read about its beauty. We study its order. There's another way to look at it, though. Slightly different way to see it. There might have been reason for the gleaming precious metals and rich, deep colors of finest fabric for the curtains was to cover up and hide what the tabernacle really was. It's a dumpster behind a slaughterhouse, a violent cauldron. Hear me out. See, what the priest saw and what he faced from the moment of going on duty in the sanctuary, the morning offering of a ram, slaughtered, throat sliced, skinned and quartered, intestines measured out as to what was to be burned on the altar and what was to be discarded or destroyed. I looked this up in a table of animals and how much blood they held. The average ram holds 2 quarts of blood, all spilled out. Splashed at the sides of the altar and the rest of it gathered in a bowl to be discarded. Then the offering was placed on the altar itself and sent up in smoke. How many here agree that barbecue has a pleasing aroma? It does. But you didn't take this offering off when it became medium well. You left it on the altar until it turned completely to smoke. And it burned there every day, every morning, every evening. Then during the day, the hundreds, maybe thousands of sin offerings, lamb after lamb, ram after ram, goat after goat, same procedure, slitting, skinning, gutting, burning. Then in the evening, it ends as it started with another ram. Every day, this violent cauldron of grace. Dumpster's appropriate way of looking at it behind the courtyard with the altar. See, the sin offering transferred the sin to the sanctuary itself. The sanctuary on earth was designed to absorb sin. It stored it. Confession over the sacrifice asked that the blood be the vehicle that transfers the sin to the sanctuary, a dumpster. And then every year on a certain day, around September, October, Yom HaKippurim, or Yom Kippur, or the Day of Atonement, this cauldron of violence and grace was emptied and completely cleansed. But even this act of pure grace on this planet required more violence. After the daily sacrifice on the Day of Atonement, the high priest then sacrificed a bull that would atone for his family and his family's sin. Now we're up to 7.5 gallons of blood. Then the goat of the sin offering, 2.5 quarts of blood, taken all the way into the most holy place, where even the most clean places in the tabernacle, the Ark of the Covenant, needed cleansing here. That mercy seat of pure hammered gold, the holy place with the gold altar of incense would need to be cleansed with blood. They have blood stains on them on earth. Atonement. To be made one with God again, to be cleansed completely of your sin so that you can stand right with God. The purest act of grace given by our God, but to a fallen, sinful race, it required a brutal act of violence. See, and in all this stands the one figure that brings peace and hope into this sin-storing dumpster, the high priest. Clothed in white linen and fine, beautiful fabric and precious stones and gold. The one man on the whole planet allowed to live out the relationship that God wanted with his children all along, face to face. The only one allowed into the most holy place to stand before God and serve him face to face, theoretically. See, as I pointed out, he needs blood to atone for his sin. He comes into a dark cubicle where a cloud hides the face of God as he sits on his earthly mercy seat. And he has to make atonement like that year after year. More bulls, more goats, more rams, gallons and gallons of blood, violent rituals of slaughter, days and days of atonement, all required for just a few moments of veiled communion with God. One man on behalf of all Israel. One lone figure on behalf of all God's children. Required, by the way, not by God. I don't believe God requires all of this. We did. We signed up for this. We were the ones. It was our faithlessness. It was our sin. It was our fear that refused the relationship that God originally offered them. The relationship that he had with Moses and Moses alone. He told Miriam and Aaron that he could talk to Moses face to face. Everyone else, I can't. Only Moses is the one that was willing to come up the mountain to walk with him and to talk with him. Everyone else flat out refused. And when they refused, they asked for this. They asked for this intercession. They asked that God confine himself to the smallest part of all, to the darkest part of all, and that only one man would be able to go in and have communion, but not face to face, completely veiled. Even within the most holy place, he was veiled by the cloud of incense that wafted over the veil. Even the human high priest didn't get to see him face to face. So I believe that God sits in his box, brokenhearted, and waiting each year just for that one moment of communion with this one duty-bound representative of all Israel. God really is willing to take what we'll give him. And if that's all we'll give him, he was faithful and he sat and he waited all year. And of course, his children are completely content with it. In fact, instead of learning what we should learn about the sanctuary, we then espouse theory and theology, and we claim then to know the illustrations. We claim that we see the Messiah in the sanctuary, and we proudly pat ourselves on the back, and we perform the sacrifices right, and we decorate the temple, and we expand it and beautify it and improve of its waste disposal, and we just don't get it. I don't look at the sanctuary to find out more about Christ and what he did for us. I understand what Christ and what he did for us, then I learn more about the sanctuary. But still, this loving, longing, broken-hearted God sits behind a veil, hidden from the children that he longed to be with. Moses, go get them. Bring them out of slavery to this mountain. Bring them to me. He sits at the center of this violent cauldron of grace. By Jesus' day, the ark is gone. It never made it back. As far as we know, when Nebuchadnezzar took it, when he sacked the temple, it never made it back from Babylon. Nobody knows where it is. The ritual truly is merely ritual now. The priesthood is completely politicized and corrupt. The veil is still there as if it still serves a purpose, along with all the blood and the violence. Israel is still willing to go through with it, even though it is completely empty. It's still a violent cauldron, but now it lacks the grace. What's the point? There is a point. Author of Hebrews in chapter 8 says, the main point is this. I love that Hebrews takes you through seven chapters before he says, now the main point is this, that what we are saying is that we have such a high priest, one who is seated at the right hand of the throne of the majesty in heaven, not in the sanctuary created by hands, but in the sanctuary that only God could create. That's the main point. We have such a high priest, one made clean not by the blood of goats and bulls, but by his own blood, a willing victim thrown into this violent cauldron, the one and only one who can buy us this violent grace. He was despised and rejected by others, a man of suffering, acquainted with infirmity, as one with whom others hide their faces. He was despised, and we held him of no account. Surely he's borne our infirmities, carried our diseases, yet we accounted him stricken, struck down by God and afflicted. But he was wounded for our transgressions, crushed for our iniquities, and upon him was the punishment that made us whole. And by his bruises we are healed. All of us, like sheep, have gone astray, and we've all turned our own way. And the Lord laid on him the iniquity of us all. He was oppressed and afflicted, and yet he did not open his mouth. Like a lamb that's led to the slaughter, like a sheep that before it shears is silent, he did not open his mouth. See, none of this works. The sanctuary didn't work. And this table, by the way, in case you haven't understood that this table is our sanctuary, it doesn't work without the high priest either. None of this works without the priest. None of this goes without the priest. Just as the former human high priest at least once a year pulled aside the veil to enter on behalf of all, this high priest with his willing act of victimhood, a high priest that would sacrifice himself? Are you kidding me? The high priest willingly, brutalized by my sin, tears this veil away forever. He enters once and for all. No veil, no cloud, nothing. And when he does, he turns back around. He walks back into the holy place. He takes the bread and the wine off the showbread table and walks out and sets it for us today here. And says, take and eat. Take and drink. He enters once and for all that so we could walk and talk with him. Our perfect sacrifice, our perfect atonement, our perfect table set today by our high priest. This is nothing without the high priest. I told you that communion would bring us to that point where we would look at the transaction and everything of the sanctuary, and it all comes down to it right here, right at this table. Every quarter, we are privileged and blessed to be able to live out our experience of how we came to Christ. We come to Christ, and we immediately want to be what? Peter said, they said, what do we do? What do we do with this? Peter said, repent and be what? Baptized. We come to Christ, we want to be baptized. We're baptized. How many here remember their baptism? We all do, don't we? Every quarter, we get to be baptized again. That's why we wash each other's feet. Peter said, don't wash just my feet, wash all of me. Jesus said, Peter, you've already been baptized, bro. All you need is your feet washed. All you need is from quarter to quarter to wash away the sin from then to there. All the sin that we've had from our baptism till now can be washed away every quarter if we just come to communion and we just believe that he has done this for us. And then we come back to the table and we receive all the atonement that the high priest offered. His perfect intercession. His perfect judgment upon sin in the world. His perfect sacrifice to make us one. And all the violence that was required, all of it, every bit of it, every drop of blood that was spilled for thousands of years, up to his blood himself, Jesus reduces now into a little cup and to a little loaf. No more violence. The world operates by violence. The world exacts punishment, exacts discipline by violence. Not anymore. Jesus suffered that once and for all and then set this table for us. We're not a violent people anymore, especially at this table. So, I'll give you an opportunity to go be rebaptized. And if you can't, because of some reason or another, remember, foot washing is just a ritual too. If you believe, then he does for you what we say it does for us. So have an opportunity to wash each other's feet. Ladies, you meet in the conference room, right out in the foyer to the left. Men, out the door, all the way down to the second room, to the second to last room on the right, the early teen room, and couples will be in the youth room right next door. Go experience that, and then come right back here to the table, and we'll be served by Jesus himself.